Shri Baliruvacha, Bali Maharaj said, Aho, alas, Brahmanadayada, O son of a Brahmana, Vachaha, the words, Te, of you, Vruddhasammataha, are certainly acceptable to learned and elderly persons. Tvam, you, Balaha, a boy, Balishamati, without sufficient knowledge, Swartham, self-interest, Prati, toward, Abudha, not knowing sufficiently, Yatha, as it should have been. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Bali Maharaj said, O son of a Brahman, your instructions are as good as those of learned and elderly persons. Nonetheless, you are a boy and your intelligence is insufficient. Thus, you are not very prudent in regard to your self-interest. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being full in himself, actually has nothing to want for his self-interest. Lord Vamanadev, therefore, had not gone to Bali Maharaj for his own self-interest. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5.29, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. The Lord is the proprietor of all planets in both the material and spiritual worlds. Why should he be in want of land? Bali Maharaj rightly said that Lord Vamanadev was not at all prudent in regard to his own personal interests. Lord Vamanadev had approached Bali not for his personal welfare, but for the welfare of his devotees. Devotees sacrifice all personal interests to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And similarly, the Supreme Lord, although having no personal interests, can do anything for the interests of his devotees. One who is full in himself has no personal interests. Today's Gopal Bhatta Goswami's disappearance. Sure, it'd be easier if there's a book. I can't find a book here. I don't know what happened to the book. Okay. Text 19. I'm able to give you an entire island. Oh, thank you. Text 19. I'm able to give you an entire island because I am the proprietor of the three divisions of the universe. You have come to take something from me and have pleased me by your sweet words. But you're asking only 3 paces of land. Therefore, you're not very intelligent. Purport. According to Vedic understanding, the entire universe is regarded as an ocean of space. In that ocean, there are innumerable planets, and each planet is called a dvipa or island. When approached by Lord Vamanadev, Bali Maharaj was actually in possession of all the dvipas or islands in space. Bali Maharaj was very pleased to see the features of Vamanadev and was ready to give him as much land as he could ask. But because Lord Vamanadev asked only 3 paces of land, Bali Maharaj considered him not very intelligent. I know, I need bigger typeface. Text 20. O small boy, one who approaches me to beg something should not have to ask anything anymore, anywhere. Therefore, if you wish, you may ask from me as much land as will suffice to maintain you according to your needs. Text 21 also? Okay, text 21. The Personality of Godhead said, O my dear King, even the entirety of whatever there may be within the three worlds to satisfy one's senses cannot satisfy a person whose senses are uncontrolled. Now this purport is very interesting purport. Okay. The material world is an illusory energy to deviate the living entities from the path of self-realization. Anyone who is in this material world is extremely anxious to get more and more things for sense gratification. Actually, however, the purpose of life is not sense gratification but self-realization. Therefore, those who are too addicted to sense gratification are advised to practice mystic yoga system or Ashtanga yoga consisting of Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara and so on. In this way, one can control the senses. The purpose of controlling the senses is to stop one's implication in the cycle of birth and death. As stated by Rishabhdev, Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma yadindriya puritaya apnoti nasadhu manye yata atmanoyam asannapi kleshada ashadehaha. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activity. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received a body which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it is not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. Thus, according to Rishabhdev, the human beings in this material world are just like madmen engaged in activities which they should not perform, but which they do perform only for sense gratification. Such activities are not good because in this way one creates another body for his next life as punishment for his nefarious activities. As soon as he gets another material body, he is put into repeated suffering in material existence. Therefore, the Vedic culture or Brahmanical culture teaches one how to be satisfied with possessing the minimum necessities of life. To teach this highest culture, Varnashram Dharma is recommended. The aim of Varnashram divisions, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas is to train one to control the senses and be content with the bare necessities. Here, Lord Vamanadeva, as an ideal brahmachari, refuses Bali Maharaja's offer to give him anything he might want. He says that without contentment, one could not be happy even if he possessed the property of the entire world or the entire universe. In human society, therefore, the Brahmanical culture, Kshatriya culture and Vaishya culture must be maintained and people must be taught how to be satisfied with only what they need. In modern civilization, there is no such education. Everyone tries to possess more and more, and everyone is dissatisfied and unhappy. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore establishing various farms, especially in America, to show how to be happy and content with minimum necessities of life and to save time for self-realization, which one can very easily achieve by chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Mukam Karoti Vachalam, Pangum Langayate Giram, Yat Kripat Maham Vande, Shri Gurum Dinataranam, Krishna Padayak. So here's the situation. We can appreciate both Bali Maharaj and Vamandev. Bali Maharaj is now the king of the three worlds. Pretty much he owns the universe. And along with owning the universe, he has a very charitable disposition. So anyone can ask anything from him and he's willing to give. And here comes a young Brahmin boy, Vamana. The word Vamana in Sanskrit means dwarf-like. So Vamana was a dwarf. He had short legs and longer torso. And he comes, he's this effulgence in him. And so Bali Maharaj asks, what would you like? You're a Brahmin, I'm supposed to give you charity. Ask whatever you like. And he asks 3 paces of land. So if someone had very long legs and they ask 3 paces of land, you get decent amount. But if you have short legs, it's not that you can't cover much, right? So that's part of the whole intrigue here. And do you know why he asked for 3 paces of land? Why 3 paces? Why not 2? Why not 4? Why not 6? Any idea? Why 3? It is described that for any one of us, if you're standing in one place and you take 3 paces, that amount of land that you've covered is enough to bury us. So it's only the space of a grave. 1, 2, 3. The other day I was giving class, and after that I was chanting japa, and I was measuring 3 paces to see if that's my body will fit in it. It is like that. So whatever each one of us covers is 3 paces, our body will fit in that. So Vaman basically is saying, I just need enough land to bury myself. I don't need much. And he's showing that that is the heart of a Brahman, that his need is nothing but the bare necessities. I'm not going to sing you the song, but bare necessities is based that a person doesn't need, according to this Brahman, that a person doesn't need a lot to keep himself or herself going. Okay? What we all need a lot of is Krishna's mercy. So as a Brahman, he's interested in that. Of course, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But besides that, as a Brahman, now, so when he asked for 3 paces of land, for Bali, it's a joke. It's like, come on. I can give you a whole planet in the universe if you like. Why are you asking for 3 paces of land, which is nothing? You can't grow anything in it. 3 paces. What will you grow? 1 tomato plant? That also, I don't know if this gets provided sufficiently for you. So here he says, Aho, alas, Brahmana Dayada, you're a son of a Brahman. Vachaste Vriddha Sammata. You're very short, but you're speaking very tall things, you know, tall orders. And Vriddha Sammata means it's great words that are spoken by very learned persons. So he's saying you're speaking beyond your age. Each one of us, you know, speak according to our age. And when we are young, if you ask a 10-year-old, what do you want to be? I want to be Superman. We speak beyond our age. We'll do this and we'll do that till we come to, 25, and we're like, no Superman. If we can just be a man, that'd be good enough for me. So he says, you're speaking way beyond your age. It's great words that, the very learned would speak, no doubt. Very learned words. Tvam balo, but you're a young boy. And balisha mati. Mati means the mind. Balisha mati means you're very childish in your thinking. You're a young boy, but you're speaking big words. So you're very immature. You sound very immature. Balisha mati. Swartham prati. So towards your own self-interest, abudha. Buddha means intelligent, and abudha is the opposite of it. Not so intelligent. Abudho yatha. You speak like big words. You speak big words, but you don't know how to take care of yourself properly. Ask me for, a couple of acres of land, a few cows, some gold that get you started, and you can live happily. But you're asking for 3 paces of land. This is very unintelligent. The 3 paces of land is useless. You cannot do anything productive in that land because it's too small. And in one sense, you're insulting me because I'm the master of the three worlds. I can give you anything you want. Ask for a planet. I'll give it to you. So the pastime is suggests is and Bali Maharaj is in this state of pride. The pride is, if you come to me and ask something from me, I have the capacity to give you so much that you never have to go to anyone else again ever and ask anything. Because Brahmins, they take a little by charity from here, they go somewhere else, they take some more charity there, somewhere here, somewhere there. So he's saying, once you take from me, you will not need to go anywhere else. I can give you so much wealth. But why are you asking for 3 paces of land? And Vamandev very quickly responds, "Oh Bali Maharaj, a person who is greedy, for such a person, even if you give the entire universe, it's not sufficient. But for a person who's satisfied, a little will be sufficient. Trilokyam Ajitendriyam na shaknuvanti te sarva pratipuryatam nripa." So, for a person who's greedy, he's saying the word, a person whose senses are uncontrolled, same as greed. For such a person, you give the entire universe and it will not be sufficient. What is that phrase? Jitendra Prabhu says, there is enough for everyone's need, but not enough for one person's greed. Now, the Bhagavad Gita helps us deal with two concepts, lust and greed. Do you know the difference between lust and greed? What do you think, Marcel? What's the difference between lust and greed? However you like. Lust can be limited, but greed is unlimited. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that lust is unlimited. The more you offer it, it's like feeding fuel into fire. Dushpurena analena cha. Dushpurena analena cha. As a feeding fuel into fire.
I would like to change my answer to lust turns into greed.
Lust, okay, that's fine, but what is the difference?
I don't know.
All right, that's a good answer. But that's an answer, not necessarily. See, as students of Bhagavad Gita, it's good to churn a little bit to know the difference. Someone will ask us.
Following, he said lust turns into greed. I think lust is more of the closer to the primordial nature of that area. Like lust associated with desire, there is the purest desire, which is to serve Krishna, and then with the material contamination, it can become lust in a material form, and then later manifests, I guess, more grossly as greed to satisfy
Okay.
that, or to fail to satisfy that more accurately.
All right, thank you for sharing that.
I would think lust is like candy, and greed is you want more of that.
So, kama and greed is called lobha. Lust is the burning of the senses to come in contact with that object of the senses. It's that burning sensation, that agitation, the constant like that. That's lust. And greed in one way that Jai Baldev said, is how much ever you give to satisfy that lust, the greed is that it's not enough. So they're connected, they're related. Lust is the basic burning of the senses for want of gratification. And greed is how much of a gratification you give is not enough. It doesn't feel enough. So then that greed makes a person, you know, run after more and more and more. And lust keeps burning because this is, it's a hunger, it's a thirst. It's this constant, you have to give it. It's a craving. And what you give it is not satisfying is greed. More and more and more. There's a story about greed. There was a father who was extremely rich. Extremely rich. He owned all land that you could see from here to the horizon. And he had a son who was not qualified. So the father has said that until my son turns 21, my entire property and estate will be under the care of a trust. And when he turns 21, on his 21st birthday, he will get as much land as he can cover on foot. From sunrise to sunset, that's all his. So this young man, because he knew of this thing in his father's will, trained himself from the age of 16 into a very, very agile, strong runner. He was waiting for his 21st birthday because he had a lot of land to cover. So as the sun rose on his 21st birthday, he was all ready, you know, full all... cylinders in full throttle. And as soon as the sun rose, he darted. Because he had to cover a lot of land, he had a strategy. The strategy was he would run till noon. And the part of the deal in the will was, from the starting point, he needs to run or cover as much land as he can, and he has to return to the starting point. Only then he gets the land. It's not like he just gives. He has to come back to the starting point. That's a small detail. So his plan was, I'm going to run till noon, and then I'm going to turn and run back, so that I can come back to the start line. And that's all my land. Runs. Keeping a watch. As he's running, he's making good speed, and he's covering enough land. So now the sun is right on the zenith, you know, the high noon. Looks at his watch, he knows it's noontime. He should now turn back. That's his strategy, right? But he says, you know, I've been running well. I've done better than what I thought I would cover. So I know I have good speed, a little bit more. And then I can turn back. So instead of 12, let's make it 12:30. So he kept running. And he thought, hey, I didn't realize that I had so much energy. You know, I can make it till 1 o'clock and then return. I can do it. So he ran more. And I said, it's a long day, the sun won't set so soon, I can cover a little bit more land because I'm already here, you know, that land looks really fertile, it's by the bank of a river, let me cover that too. And suddenly at 3 o'clock he said, okay, I need to turn back now. So he turned back and he said, now let me run back. Started darting back, but he had covered a lot more initially than he had originally planned. So, but he needed all that land. He couldn't give it up. So he ran. And it said that about 20 meters from the start line, he vomited blood and fell dead because his lungs couldn't pump more oxygen than that. He had exhausted it to such a degree that 20 meters before the start line, he vomited blood and died. The person's greed is such that it makes intelligence go to sleep. The lust and greed, they work together. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that there are three gates to hell. Lust, greed and anger. And they're all connected because lust makes a person greedy, and one's greed, when not satisfied, it becomes angry, frustrated. And these three open the doors for the hellish conditions of life. So our... our acharyas, they help us counteract each of these enemies, if you will, by their own way. So greed is counteracted by satisfaction. And therefore, the Brahmins are considered elevated because they have learned how to be satisfied. And the satisfaction, let's go back to greed, because there's a nice correlation here. Greed of whatever kind is a symptom of, we say, dissatisfaction, right? It's a symptom of dissatisfaction, and primarily it's a symptom of insecurity in one's relationship with Krishna. And it shows up, that's the symptom. Like medically, if there's a problem, it shows up as symptoms. And an expert doctor will look at symptoms and try to understand what's the core of the problem. So in this world, that insecurity of not having Krishna in one's life manifests as greed or lust. Lust and greed, kaam and lobha, these two. And I'll tell you the verse also for it. That greed is because one is not satisfied. One feels, I need more. Because one is not secure within, one feels that they need more from the external world to satisfy that. And therefore one goes after. The greed is the engine that moves a person. Lust is the burning, and the greed is the, I need. It doesn't feel enough. And therefore, Vamandev's first answer is, for a person whose senses are uncontrolled, it doesn't matter what you give, how much you give, is never enough. Therefore, Prabhupada writes in the purport that the devotees first learn to be satisfied, must learn to be satisfied with whatever one has got. And that satisfaction is something that we have to hear about, see in the lives of others, and practice. Now, satisfaction just doesn't come because, oh, I need to be satisfied. So to counteract that greed, we are asked to pay attention to what we have. What we have is access to Krishna. And that access to Krishna counteracts and more than suffices the need for anything else outside. In Bhagavatam, 1st canto, 2nd chapter, while describing the entire process of bhakti, there is these verses. When we were doing a panel here, I recited those verses. And we recite this every day. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. The next verse is tada rajas tamo bhavaha kama lobhadayaschaye cheta etair anavidham sthitam sattve prasiddhati. That by serving the Bhagavatam every day, and serving the Bhagavata, the devotee, every day, the influence of passion and ignorance, tada rajas tamo bhavaha, the influence of passion and ignorance is removed from one's life. And passion and ignorance manifest as kama, lobha, adaya, lust, greed, etc. So that means, as people are influenced by lust and greed, it means that the influence of passion and ignorance is very high. And one of the things of passion, when we did our little seminar, we did the three modes of nature, passion agitates the person. And that agitation manifests as anxiety. What will happen? What will happen? So, trying to cultivate a lifestyle and both inner and grosser, subtler and grosser in the mode of goodness calms passion and ignorance. And that mode of goodness lifestyle is the study of Bhagavatam every day. It says cheta etar anavidham. One's consciousness is removed from the influence of that agitation of passion. Sthitam sattve, one becomes situated in goodness, because goodness is calming, it's healing, it's relaxing, it's nourishing. Therefore, the counteraction for greed is satisfaction, and satisfaction comes from understanding what we have. And what we have, to know the value of what we have, is called being grateful. When we know what we have and we're grateful for it, it fuels our satisfaction. Oh, I have Krishna. Or I want Krishna, and that's about it. In the Mahabharata war, just before the war, Krishna had declared, I'm not going to fight this war. And all my armies and all that, if you want, you can take. So both Duryodhana and Arjuna went to meet Krishna. And it happened that they came at the same time. And Krishna was in this mystic afternoon siesta. He had a nice rajbhog and he was taking a nap, power nap. And Duryodhana went and sat by Krishna's head on this side. And Arjun said, my place is near Krishna's feet. Because Duryodhana, and they're all sit, they're both sitting there in the same bed, they want from Krishna something. So the competitiveness is, you know, at its peak. And Duryodhana was thinking, if I sit near the by the head, when Krishna opens his eyes, he will see me first. And he will ask me, what do you want? And then I can give my list. But Krishna is very tricky. He opened his eyes and he asked Arjuna, what do you want? And Duryodhana said, but I came first. I came before Arjun came. Krishna said, but I saw Arjun first, because when I open my eyes, I see there, not here. So Arjun, what do you want? And now Duryodhana became insecure. Oh my gosh, what if he asks for the armies? Then he will have more than I. Oh, please, 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 don't ask for the army. You know, crossed his fingers, whatever he did. And Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, I want you on my side. And Duryodhana was like, yes! What a fool! He's so unintelligent. Balisha Mati, very childish in his request. Krishna? He's only asking for him. And Krishna said, Duryodhana, what do you want? I want all your armies. So be it. And Duryodhana chided Arjuna, you're very foolish. Krishna is only one person. And he's not going to fight the war either. So basically useless. And I'm taking the entire army. Yay! And Arjun said, if Krishna is there, I'm good and I don't need anything else. And so what happened is, when they came as a face-off, you know, on the day of the battle, it was an Ekadashi, they were fasting. Naturally, right? Because Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita. Imagine fighting on a fasting day. They came in front of each other, and when they looked at each other's numbers, Duryodhana had 11 Akshauhinis of warriors on his side. And Arjuna had only 7 Akshauhinis. And the great generals were all on that side, because these guys were the underdogs. Duryodhana, Karna, Dronacharya, Kripacharya, Dushasana, yeah, and all of Duryodhana's 100 brothers. Shalva, all the great uncle is on that side. All these fantastic, their own teachers, they're on that side. How can you, you know, fight your own teacher? They were the one who taught you. And Dronacharya, I mean, all these great persons on the side. And seven Akshahinis with, you know, the five Pandavas, basically. They were the only five known people. Yudhishthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula and Sahadev. The rest of the team was Drushtadyumna, and, you know, others were also there. But these are five, and there's a whole army of great, great generals on that side. But Arjuna was very confident. You know, I have Krishna on my side. That is the strength of being satisfied. Because he knew, if I have Krishna, I have everything else. And now on the other side, Duryodhan, he had everything else but not Krishna. So you see that as soon as a person is insecure, what it leads a person into saying and doing. The whole first chapter is about Duryodhana's diplomacy. He says and does and manipulates and maneuvers because he's insecure. He's not satisfied. He's not satisfied that he has the entire country. Entire Bharatvarsha, this is pretty much the planet. And he was asked, can you please give them five villages? Okay, you don't want to give their own throne back. Fine. Five villages, small villages like Elk Grove, Tingley Park, something small, small villages. Not even Schomburg and, you know, Evanston. These are important ones. Small ones. Unknown little ones. Not five villages. I will not give them land that fits under the tip of a pin. Fight and take it if you want. Why? Because Duryodhana was insecure that if Yudhishthir got those small five villages, his glory would expand and my glory would diminish. Oh, so no. So Vamandev is saying that for a person whose senses are not controlled, who cannot be satisfied, it doesn't matter what you give, how much you give, it won't work. So I'm satisfied. 3 paces of land is enough to bury me. I'm good enough. I don't need anything. So our, as devotees, our call to action, because after all, we need to do something from Bhagavatam, it shows what to do. Not just that it's a good, nice verse and what to do. It's a call for action. A call for action is to cultivate the sense of satisfaction. And that cultivating sense of satisfaction comes along with living in the mode of goodness. If we don't transition towards goodness, satisfaction will not come. As long as passion is there, there's no satisfaction. Then we have to sing that song. What is that song, Jitendra Prabhu? I can get no satisfaction. That's a famous song. Because it's a song from passion. And everyone resonates with it. Yeah, yeah, that's true. I can get no... Why? Because it's passion. So more of goodness lifestyle is very, very necessary. Because it brings along with it the qualities that are associated with that mode of nature. So our food, our habits, our speech, our thoughts, our practices, they're meant to cultivate that for us. So then one is satisfied. Well, Krishna has given me so much. He's given me so much. I don't need anything more. If he gives more, that's up to him. If he doesn't, that's okay. That's up to him. Whatever he gives, he knows. But regardless of what he gives or does not give, one thing is for sure. I have access to him. That more than suffices anything else. Because at the point of death, it is the access to him that values more than what we got. None of the things we've got are going to come with us. Nothing. But we have access to Krishna, and that is the most satisfying. When Dhruva Maharaj met the Lord, he had this desire. In fact, he was very greedy. I need a kingdom that is greater than my great-grandfather's. When the Lord came in front of him and asked him, Dhruva, what do you want? Prabhupada uses the phrase, Swamin Kritarthosmi. Oh, my dear Lord, I am very grateful to you. Varam na yache. I am not asking for anything. No, no. You've done all these austerity for asking something. Ask. No, no. I don't want. When Narsingadeva appears in front of Prahlad Maharaj, they're all children. His Vamana is also childish, right? Childlike. So we have to compare other children from the Bhagavatam. So when Prahlad Maharaj was asked, Narsingadeva said, Prahlad, you've pleased me very much. Ask whatever you want. You got it. You want kingdom? You got it. You want angelic women? You got it. You want gold? Got it. Jewels? You got it. You want long life of sense gratification? You got it. Take it. And Prahlad says, what kind of a master is he who satisfies all the desires of a servant? And what kind of a servant is he who keeps asking from the master for more and more? I don't want this relationship. My relationship is of one thing with you, that I'm your servant. And let me be that way. In fact, I'm the servant of your servant. The phrase he uses is, Koham na visruje tava bhritya sevam. Visruje means to let go. He says, how can anyone let go the service of your devotees? Tava bhritya, one who's your devotee. Tava bhritya sevam. I don't want to leave that. That's what I want, nothing else. Now a person may say, my greed is not satisfied. So our acharyas give another way. Okay, if you're greedy, then desire, let you not be satisfied with how much service and how much you can do for Krishna. Turn your greed in that direction. Be restless. Because greed makes a person restless. Be restless that you've not done enough for Krishna. Be restless that you've not done enough to express your gratitude to Krishna. Be restless that you haven't served Krishna to the fullest. So let the restlessness be that way. Then let Krishna, he's unlimited and your greed is unlimited. So it's a good match. Between unlimited greed for service and Krishna's unlimited capacity to keep us busy and engaged in hearing and chanting and serving and worshipping and praying and whatever we need to do. So Vamandev attacks the very root of the problem, dissatisfaction in the heart. And that dissatisfaction is because of not feeling connected with Krishna. Bhayam dvitiya abhivineshatasya. That was the refrain that Maharaj was speaking during the weekend. That anxiety, fear means anxiety, right? It's a whole grade from disturbance to hysteria. In between is anxiety somewhere. This all is fear. And fear or anxiety comes because we think that there is something other than Krishna of value out there, and we want to satisfy that. It's not going to happen. So that insecurity needs to be addressed. And it's addressed both from the mind and from the intelligence. Therefore Arjuna, after hearing the Bhagavad Gita, says, Nashta moha smritir labdhava. My memory is restored and my illusion has been dispelled. The dispelling of the illusion is that my insecurity is stemming from something outside of your order or instruction or relationship with you. Now that it's been restored, I'm very confident. I'm okay. Whatever happens, happens. So Vamandev's instructions are very potent. And we'll see the exchanges between Bali Maharaj and Vamana as they go back and forth in this dialogue. And he keeps at it. And he's tempted again and again. Take more. Ask for more. Come on. No. I'm okay. Okay. Any comments, questions?
Hare Krishna. When we're practicing devotional service, the activities of mode of goodness are very easy to identify, you know, waking up and being clean and these things, and simplicity. Yet, the mentality of the mode of passion, particularly in terms of one is eager to serve Krishna more. However, like, I have to explain it a bit. Like, the difficulty I'm finding in the mentality is that the devotional service, when tinged with an immature mode of passion, it's still like just mode of passion. And the experience in that devotional service in the mode of goodness is an idea. It remains an idea. Well, that would be nice if my devotional service was in the mode of goodness. Mm. Whereas in the mode of passion is very real. It's very, I mean, one is experiencing that desire tinged completely with insecurity and envy and these things. So it's very real, yet we're striving for an idea that's harder to, you understand?
Yeah.
So how to, you know.
Yeah, how to, and my answer will also be like, okay. First of all, it is good to understand the modes of nature, how they operate, the mechanics of it. That's what we dealt with the other day. Modes of nature are constantly competing with one another for supremacy. That's Krishna's instruction. So let's look at our, you know, when we drive a car. Do you drive? You know how to drive. Okay. When we drive, yes, we're looking forward. Okay, we're looking ahead, but once in a while we look into our rear view mirror to know what's there, what have we left behind. Similarly, in life, we once in a while look in our rear view mirror. Where was I? And what my mentality and activities were before. Quite often, they're seriously in ignorance. So somewhere, a devotee or the devotees intervened and have put me on a trajectory that's moving from ignorance to passion. So it's in the right direction. So continue, or let's continue, so that the next stage is goodness. And here's what usually happens. The body moves first and the mind follows to some degree. The fact that you're here versus somewhere else. The fact that there is a desire to follow that idea of devotional service and goodness. But you're tinged with passion and ignorance because you're still in the material world. So there's no surprise here. It shouldn't be like, what? Still? Oh, you're here. This is the nature of this world. You shouldn't be too surprised. So we're in the right direction. Just keep at it. And then the mind will also come. So it just that one wakes up early in the morning, right, or one eats very austerely is not goodness necessarily. Goodness is in the mentality, not in the activity itself. Because there are many persons who, if they're gymming or they want to run a marathon, they're up very early at the crack of dawn, perhaps even earlier than the devotees. They're very austere in what they eat. Okay, and the devotees eat pizza and cheesecake for breakfast. We do. It's only the Hare Krishnas. This has like this totally wacko breakfast style. But still, we do. So it's not just the activity. It's the mentality. The mentality of that person is, I must perform, I must win, I'm better than others. You know, that's the passion. It's very selfish. And goodness is, you know, I want to serve Krishna. I want to live in a lifestyle that is favorable to serving Krishna. Like that. That's why I want to get up. That's why I want to serve. I want to chant. So it's in the mentality. And that mentality is usually conflicted by that Prabhu gets up 10 minutes before I do. What do I need to do to, you know, beat that? Then we're mixed with it. It's okay. Just keep going. We'll keep going and it will transform our desires. That's the verse in the Bhagavatam. The more we serve Bhagavatam daily and the devotees daily, the mentality moves from passion and ignorance to being situated in goodness. It's not like there's a little switch that goes, you know, on, oh, I've entered goodness now. Cool. It's not like that. It happens gradually and progressively. The if you like, another verse from Bhagavatam, nectar of instruction, is the verse of chanting of the holy name that Rupa Goswami gives. Right? The jaundice. You like the jaundice example because you bring it up. So he says, when a person is suffering from jaundice of the heart, of the liver, of whatever, even the heart, everything, the sweet holy name tastes bitter. But the only remedy is to chant it daily. But there's a condition to how to chant in that verse. He says, Kintu, however, Anudinam, every day, day after day, Adarat. Adarat means with respect, with gratitude, with feelings of wanting to serve Krishna. If you chant like that, Anudinam Adarat, then he says, Kramena, day by day, or in progressive steps, one is cleared of that jaundice. So there's a qualifying word for it, Adarat. Adara means to give respect, to chant the holy name with proper respect and regard. Then he says, if one moves from the deceased condition to the healthy condition. So keep at it, desire it, and let's inspire us. Subal Prabhu, you had your hand raised too.
A little on the same area of Jaini Tagore Hari's question. These elements of insecurity, anxiety, dissatisfaction that stems from the motor passion, you're explaining. It's clear when we're in the material consciousness, you know, these things, you know, manifest in people, constantly living with that, on that condition. Now, in devotional service, we come and obviously, you know, the fan's still moving, although you unplug it, you still have these things happening. And you explained that the reason Bhamanadeva explains is that we're not connecting properly to Krishna. And you explained so nicely. A wonderful class, actually. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and you know, you hear expressions of devotees expressing dissatisfaction. You know, the whole Saranagati prayers, many of them are expressing, you know, dissatisfaction, lamentation. You know, you hear anxiety and insecurity too, in terms of, you know, when that will happen, you know, that type of thing. Obviously, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is showing us, you know, that hankering for that connection. Now, you know, similar to, but the questions of Jainita, how we can, because anxiety and insecurity and dissatisfaction can take a whole, you know, they can take a whole shape, you know, and basically completely bewilder you in your devotional service, you know. So how you can be sharp enough to actually not allow that to happen and keep, you know, we're on track. We're in it, in, you know, just like that verse that Srila Goswami spoke on Uddhava Gita, that, you know, you keep at the process of serving Krishna and the devotees, you know, it will happen, you know, like gradual thing.
There is a, so having, that was the last part of my talk was, if there is a hankering, lamentation, greed, let it be directed in terms of that I'm not satisfied, that I've served Krishna enough. I'm not satisfied. I'm not satisfied that I've served him sufficiently or properly. Let me improve there. So the greed can be directed. There is a verse, first canto, 7th chapter, verse number 7, where Vyasadeva says, Yasyam vaishruyamanayam krishne paramapuruṣe bhaktir utpadyate pumsam shokam moha bhayapaha. So you touch those three things: shoka, lamentation; moha, illusion; bhaya, fear or anxiety. These three are completely killed. Apaha, they're burnt. And bhakti utpadyate, and bhakti manifests, germinates in the heart by one activity. Yasyam vai shruyamanayam. That our anxiety is reduced by hearing. It is true when a person is anxious and you tell them the news, right? If someone is anxious, let's say, okay, my son Prahlad is traveling to Costa Rica right now. I was anxious whether his flight landed and he is safe, right? Till I hear from him, I am safe. My anxiety is he okay, is he safe? And as soon as I hear, he's safe, right? Then the next thing is anxious. Is he eating something or is he sleeping well, whatever, but you get the idea. So hearing is the counteraction for anxiety. When we hear material sound, then the anxiety only moves from one place to another. It's not resolved. But when we hear spiritual sound, it completely burns the anxiety away. If I hear every day Nityananda Pran Das, for sure Krishna is there for you. He's said it many times. He's shown you many ways. He's there for you. I hear it again. And not only for you, he's there for everyone. It gives me some confidence in the heart. The hearing is the remedy for anxiety. We did two things. You said the fan is still turning even if we have unplugged, right? So recently, last Sunday, when we were doing our Bhakti Shastri, we touched on this topic. Generally, when Prabhupada says, you know, you unplug the fan, our picture of our karma is like that of a ceiling fan. That you turn the switch off and it stops, right? But our karma is not ceiling fan. Our karma is a large turbine that generates electricity. It's like that. It is so massive that when you switch off a turbine, it takes 3 weeks to stop. Not like a ceiling. We have a underestimation of our karma. You think it's like a fan. You turn off and in 3 seconds it stops. It's not like that. It's a turbine. It is whirring at such large speeds. And the blade of a turbine is as high as this building, perhaps. And it moves at some, you know, 5,000 or 20,000 revolutions per minute. Is so massive that even if you turn off the turbine, it takes 3 weeks for it to stop. I know because my father was a nuclear scientist, and then they would do something to turn it off. They had to wait 3 weeks, a month for the thing to stop. Our karma is like that. That's the fan we are dealing with. For perhaps you, it's a smaller fan. I'm talking of a massive turbine for me. So I can't expect that, oh, what happened? I unplugged. It's still moving with full gusto. It's going to take a long while. So that's one. And we did another exercise in our Bhakti Shastri. You take the Bhagavad Gita, and from every chapter, you find verses that give us assurance and confidence that Krishna is on our side. It's a fascinating exercise. We came up with about 30 or 40 verses like that, starting with chapter 1. And Krishna is saying again and again and again, I'm there, I'll take care of you. I'm there, I'll take care of you. I'm there, I'll take care of you. He says it in different ways. But the whole exercise is so fascinating. In the Bhagavad Gita. Just the Bhagavad Gita, what to speak of Bhagavatam. So hearing is the counteracting of that anxiety. Hearing spiritual sound. Material sound addresses only the temporary anxiety. But anxiety itself doesn't go. Does that address your comment? Jai Baldev? and then I gotta go.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. My question is kind of related to your last point there, how you did an exercise with Krishna's on our side. So you were mentioning Dhruva and Prahlad. The Lord asked them, what do you want? And they said, nothing, just you. But the tendency is for us is that when we put ourselves in the category of Prahlad or Dhruva, you know, if the Lord asks us, what do you want? And then we'll give a whole Christmas list. And the tendency is that, I'll just give an example of like...
So that's why the Lord doesn't ask us.
Exactly.
He doesn't say, what do you want?
So when we
he just says, go do that service.
Exactly. So when we put ourselves in that category, like we hear that the Lord satisfies his devotees. So I'll just give a simple example, like a wife may ask the Lord, I wish my husband was more loving. And then the husband is praying to the Lord, I wish my wife was less nagging. And so, you know, the tendency is that, not, that's just one example, is that our desires contradict each other. So, and then there's, you know, bickering and fighting. So how important is it for us to, you know, realize that, you know, the Lord is not always going to give us what he wants. He knows what's best for us, like a parent, a parent. So
we develop confidence in Krishna by mutual interaction. That when we get together, our discussion must be on how Krishna is giving us confidence. Then we give each other confidence, right? We know these two verses. One is in Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter. Karunanidhe, what's that verse? My devotees discuss about me. Yeah, what's the verse? How does it start? Mat chitta madgata prana. Bodhayantascha paraspa. Bodhayanta means that they sharpen each other's intelligence by discussion. And what's that intelligence being discussed? That my anxieties, my rational faculty is addressing my anxiety. Krishna is there for you. Bodhayantascha parasparam. Kathayantascha mam nityam. They're constantly talking about my stories. My stories of how I've been there for the devotees. Tushyanti cha. Tushyanti means satisfied, because it's the countermeasure for greed. Ramanti cha. They're happy. It's the countermeasure for anxiety, because when one is anxious, one cannot be happy. Right? And in 11th canto, there is this discussion. Parasparanu kathanam. When one speaks to each other, Pavanam Bhagavat Yashaha, one very purifying glories of the Lord. Mitho Tushti, mutually they are satisfied. Mitho Ratihi, mutually they develop attraction for me. And Mitha Nivrita Atmanaha, and mutually they commit to each other. Yeah, you're giving up something bad, I will also give up something bad. You know, I also want to commit to Krishna. This is the power of sitting and discussing. Not just I read some verse and say, yeah, that's nice. We have to discuss with each other, share how Krishna is intervening and helping us again and again and again. Even the small day-to-day things. Today Krishna inspired me like this, you know, I was thinking that. We share with each other. That's when that confidence builds. Yeah, I'm with people that, you know, Krishna will take care of me too. And others have to tell me, what do you mean? Look at how Krishna is taking care of you. If I don't have that confidence, others have to tell me, Prabhu, see how Krishna is taking care of you. See, today in this situation, in that situation, he's taking care of you. Yes, yes. That's right. That is the bodhayantascha parasparam. Very, very important. It's also important for me to leave now. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanande.
Where did I said something earlier. restlessness, you are talking about greediness, covetousness,
it's the agitation. That is what we need to turn. The restlessness is, let me not